Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with your hosts from thehammerspeaks.com, David Todd, and from SteelersDepot.com, Dave Bryan. Just two Daves talking all the Steelers football you could ever want. And now, here's Dave and Dave.
Welcome to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave, Season 2, Episode 20, as the Steelers look forward to taking on the Indianapolis Colts at Lucas Oil Stadium Sunday night at 8:20. Dave, as always, good to be with you. We got a good interview coming today.
We had a great interview with actually, we had two great interviews with him. He was gracious enough to give us a mulligan, I think partially because he's a little bit of a Steelers fan at heart. But anyway, a great interview with him that we'll get to here first.
Yep, Phil Wilson, the beat writer for the Indianapolis Star. You can follow Phil on Twitter this week at PWilson24. Get all your latest Colts updates going into the game Sunday night. He's got a couple articles up at the Star today, and you can also check out his blog, Bounce It Off Phil B, which is also at the Indianapolis Star. So Phil and Dave and I had a conversation Wednesday, and that is in the ether because we didn't get the recording down right. So Phil was gracious enough to come back with this Thursday. Here's that conversation. Welcome back to the Terrible Podcast. We're pleased to have as our guest Phil Wilson. Phil's the beat writer for the Indy Star who covers the Colts. And Phil is really doing yeoman's duty this week because Dave and I had him on the podcast yesterday and managed to corrupt the file. So we've got 20 more minutes of Phil's time, and we'll see if we can get it right this time. Phil, thanks for being with us.
You guys are being really, really modest and kind. I was awful yesterday, and it's my fault. And I even did it to you guys to try and give, you know, diehard Pittsburgh Steelers fans what they deserve. So,
all right. Well, Phil is better. Phil grew up rooting for the black and gold, so that's another side note that we twisted his arm a little bit. Phil, first of all, what's going on in Indy? The first 2 weeks of the season, not very good. The Peyton Manning news dominating the landscape of the NFL, really. Give us just a general overview of where things stand.
Peyton Manning is power walking around practice fields, and then when they start practicing, he watches and throws in a couple 2 cents here or there, but he's not cleared to work out really, and it's really cast a big black cloud over the city and the team, and kind of a bummer. You know, the year that Indy hosts Super Bowl, and the Colts, you know, aren't even legitimate contenders for it. I know the Steelers are, but you know, we thought the Colts might have a say in that too, and it's not going to work out that way. They've been thoroughly outclassed in their first two games. They've only scored 2 touchdowns. And both were in the fourth quarter when they were down by double digits and teams went to kind of a prevent defense. So a lot of problems, a lot of inefficiencies, a lot of negatives. And there's some good guys in this room. There's some character guys. They'll fight to death and play hard, but you get the sneaking suspicion or feeling that it's beyond them.
Phil, the injury report, of course, the first one of the week came out yesterday, and I believe they've already done some work today, and it was littered with people on it. And even Kerry Collins was on it. Can you give us an update of some of the prime players or whatnot as far as what's going on injury-wise?
I can, actually. I know more about today than I did yesterday, so this was meant to be. Aside of Peyton Manning and Nickel linebacker Ernie Sims being ruled out, and that's no surprise. Both those guys have been out for a while. But there are 12 guys on that list. Two of them practice full, so we won't worry about them. And they've played before. Kerry Collins is a limited one, and that's probably the one everybody's asking about because he's starting quarterback. And it's a right shoulder injury. We don't know how severe it is, but he was limited yesterday. He went out and was doing more today. We got to watch 10, 15 minutes. I expect Kerry Collins to play. You know, he got paid $4 million, or what, $2.8, $2.9 million after taxes, to take this beating, to take this punishment all year long. And I think he'll be a trooper and show up and play. There's several other guys on the list. Some we're not sure about. I can't tell you that Dallas Clark and Jacob Tammy, the tight ends, both practiced today, or they came out for practice. I think they'll be fine. Eric Foster, defensive tackle. He practiced. He should be fine. I don't know about Robert Mathis or Dwight Freeney. They typically take a day off, so I don't know. I doubt that their maladies are that serious. I think the guys that probably won't play, Gary Brackett, the middle linebacker, Melvin Bullitt, safety, and right guard Ryan Dean. It's just my gut feel on those guys, but I think 2 days of not practicing tells me they're trending in the wrong direction in terms of playing Sunday night against the Steelers.
Phil, if we take a look at the offense, you know, the marquee name Manning, but there's plenty of guys that people are still familiar with Reggie Wayne and Joseph Addai and Dallas Clark. But I guess the offensive line is one place where I look, and Jeff Saturday's in there at center, and Anthony Costanzo, the first-round pick, is starting at left tackle. How's the line looked over the first couple weeks?
Leaky. You know, I'm not trying to say it's, you know, overwhelmingly so, but the DM has a few leaks, and it might get better. I think Costanzo's been outstanding as a rookie left tackle, but he hasn't faced a defense like the Blitzburg 3-4 either, where you don't know quite where they're coming from at all times. I'm venturing to guess that Dick LeBeau will give that kid an education this week and just how creative he can be on dialing up blitzes. But so far, Costanzo's been good. I think Joe Wright's left guard's been okay. He's had some rough moments, but he's hung in there. Saturday's gotten beaten per sack. He's older. He's hanging in, but he's not the Saturday of old that went to all these Pro Bowls. The right side's been a mess. Brian Dean hasn't played particularly great yet. He's been hurt. Now you're going to put Mike Pollock in there for him, probably. Mike Pollock has been a disappointment. And Jeff Linkenbach, a right tackle, the second-year undrafted pro of Cincinnati, who, by all accounts, looks like he's just struggling and hanging on. They did draft a kid, Ben Angelon, in the second round of Villanova. But I guess Angelon is not ready yet, or they would have given him a look. So you've got holes on that line. And that's the biggest problem, I think, facing them, that and the fact that Terry Collins, at 38 years old, holds on the ball too long. And you put those together, and it's a recipe for disaster. Collins has lost, or he's fumbled four times. He's lost three of them. He's thrown a pick. There's been a lot of mistakes here in this offense.
And we talked about this a little bit yesterday, but in terms of formation, the Colts, do you expect them to come out with one back and two tight ends generally and try to shorten the game by running the ball?
You know, and you're right, that would make sense, but I've never known the Colts to come out in a minimalist type, you know, game plan. Their MO is to pass first instead of run. It might be smart to try and do that, but as it's often said, everybody's got to play until they get hit. The Colts need to pass the ball. They need to spread the defense out if they can. They need to throw these quick hitters to Reggie or Austin or Pierre, Dallas, maybe it's Jacob Tammy, because if they don't spread the field a little bit or give some threat to throwing, then I think the Steelers just stack it up inside the box and the Colts won't run the ball at all. Now, the Colts have run the ball well in two games. The lone irony, maybe, in all this, for years we've railed on these guys. You can't run the ball, and, you know, you just throw it, and now basically all they can do is run it, and they can't throw without Peyton Manning. So, but you guys understand that concept. Pittsburgh's good against the run, whether or not they have extra guys committed to the box or not. And so I think that while it'd be nice to say two tights, let's man up, hat on hat, get physical, it's not this team's MO. And frankly, I'm thinking Mike Tyson, Michael Spinks, 96 seconds if the Colts think they can man up and play physical with the Steelers.
Right.
Let's switch over to the defensive side of the ball. I think the matchup everybody in Steeler Nation's worried about is Dwight Freeney going up against left tackle Jonathan Scott. Freeney actually looked like he had a pretty decent day against the Browns and the behemoth Joe Thomas there. Can you talk a little bit about the defensive ends as a whole, how they've been looking, and would you suggest the Steelers run right at those guys?
Well, that is what most teams do. They will try and run right at players. That's been kind of a traditional attack and try and neutralize them and get them maybe to slow down. But the Colts have always been an outside contained end rushing team. Those ends are supposed to get up the field, the outside, and form that pocket and then collapse on it. So even if it's a run play, they're going to still do that. There's no way the Steelers can single block Greeny. That's the one area where maybe the Colts have some sort of an edge. And, you know, all you got to do is look at what happened to Joe Thomas last week. Joe Thomas is one of the best plug-in left tackles in the game, has been for 4 years. Third overall pick for the Browns, 5 years ago. And Freeney got him again. He's faced him twice, got a sack on him each time, and for his fumble each time. So Freeney's still one of the best pass rushers in the game. And Robert Mathis is a great compliment. Near side, they both have a sack in 2 games. But I think Pittsburgh's smart enough and know the personnel well enough. They know what to do, and they won't be stupid about it. I think Freeney will get chipped. It's the old Bill Belichick game plan, and nothing. There's not going to be secrets to the NFL when you figure out how to handle guys. I'll share a little pearl with you guys. You know, we were doing some advanced work before on how to defend Randy Moss, and I called Buddy Ryan, the old architect of the 46 defense, and he was out in the barn somewhere taking care of his horses. I don't know where his farm is. So he makes time for me. Literally can hear, you know, the horses in the background, all this. And Buddy says, well, the key to defending Randy Moss is to not do the same thing every play. First play, you might physical jam whatever the line of security press. Next play, you might have the safety over top to bracket him. Next play, you might, you know, just single coverage, loose, a lot of cushion. Well, that's the same thing with the light training. And Bill Belichick and the Patriots figured out a long time ago. The best way to block Freeney is not have him not know whether there's help coming, whether the tight end's going to chip him, whether the running back's going to help. So he's never quite sure whether or not he's going to get, you know, clock somebody else. So that's a little tip, but, I mean, I'm sure the Steelers know this. I'm probably not telling them anything they already know.
You mentioned Melvin Bullitt when you ran down the injury report there, and one thing that stuck out going back and watching the game against the Texans and the Browns is that Bullitt's probably the, you know, one of the weak links in there. If he doesn't play, it might not be, you know, all that terribly much of a loss. If he doesn't, who's going to fill in that spot there? And you know, how is the secondary looking as a whole?
Yeah, I haven't watched the Browns game, or I'm going home right now to do that, but I don't need to watch it again to know what you said is 100% accurate. Melvin, I love him to death. He's a great kid, undrafted kid out of A&M, but he's not played well. And he'd be the first one to say, I need to play better. Now he's banged up. Looks like he got poked his right eye, and he's got a shoulder injury to boot. So it'll be interesting to see if he can make it. I don't think he will. And if he doesn't, I think David Caldwell, a first-year pro who was on IR all rookie year last year, he's from Montclair, New Jersey. Not a bad-looking player. He's got the size to him for safety. He's obviously an unknown. But, you know, a guy that might be able to step in and do something. And then they got a rookie, Joe Lefege. I think he's from Rutgers. And Joe's been handling kickoffs and struggling to be a consistent gunner on special teams. Made a couple mistakes there. So, I think it'll be more Caldwell than Lefege, but you know the way the Colts crunch through safeties. I mean, they go through them; they always get banged up. You might see them both.
When you talked yesterday some about the corners, and we look at the defensive personnel, and some of those names stand out. But over the years, one of the things we've always thought about the Colts is they haven't had a shutdown corner. What about the two guys that are going to go out there on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's as close as they've come to having one in Jerod Powers. But because there's so many other inefficiencies or flaws, weaknesses, if you will, on this defense, I don't think Jerod's played exceptionally great yet, but he hasn't had the chance to. And frankly, if you're going up against the Colts, you don't mess with Jerod Powers. I mean, you just leave it alone because, you know, while he's a great player, well, why bother? There's enough other weaknesses. Jacob Lacy on their side is being picked on time and time and time again. You know, just rewind that mental Rolodex there, folks. Steeler fans might remember it. You know, playoff game January. Caldwell, Coach Jim Caldwell, called the timeout he shouldn't have called. it would be a 49-yard field goal. But no, no, Braylon Edwards and Mark Sanchez convinced the Jets coaching staff, hey, man, I got a shrimp boat on me. I can shove this guy off. Just throw it high. That's what Sanchez did. Edwards shoved, just thoroughly shoved Lacy the hell out of the way. But you know what? That's football. Only the strong survive, baby. And if you can't handle it, get out of the league. And 17-yard completion, Nick Bolt, 32-yard field goal, season over. And, you know, and yet here we come back next year and late still starting a corner. And it boggles our mind. I mean, I cannot explain it. There are a couple young kids, three young kids behind them. And then Justin Tryon, who we thought would start. And right now, Justin only gets on the field at nickel. And I know even Justin doesn't understand what's going on. So your guess is just mine, but I'm a whole lot impressed. I've always loved Hines Ward as a football player, and I know Mike Wallace is just absolutely phenomenal. And I think when Ben wants to throw it, he's going to have guys that know that they'll be soft spots in the zone, a lot of cushion. They'll be able to throw when they want to, I think, Pittsburgh.
We're talking with Phil Wilson, the beat writer covering the Indianapolis Colts for the Indianapolis Star. You can follow Phil on Twitter at pwilson24, and you can also follow Phil's blog, Bounce It Off Phil B, in the Indianapolis Star. Hey, Phil, one of the things that came up when they signed Kerry Collins is the quote that got a lot of play was Reggie Wayne's quote saying, we're pleased with what we have. We don't need to bring a guy in. We've got Curtis Painter, and he can be our guy. Is there any dissension in the locker room? And what's your view on Painter? Is Painter going to get a chance at some point this year?
Oh, he's going to get a chance, all right. He'll get a chance to prove once again that he's not an NFL quarterback. Sorry. You know, he should be painting instead of trying to play quarterback. Curtis is a good kid. I like him, but guess what? Just because he has a strong arm doesn't make him a quarterback. And I think Colts Vice Chairman Bill Polian is the only one who thinks that. And that's the only reason they kept him around. It doesn't make much sense, I know. Well, why keep a guy if he can't play? Well, because there's that mentality in the NFL, and it's not just here. It's a lot of places where there's always somebody that thinks they know better than everybody else. And this is a classic mistake. Reggie Wayne did get a lot of pub, but though the soundbites didn't show or didn't reveal was three or four times during that interview when he was ranting about having Curtis Painter's back, he said nothing against Collins, nothing against Kerry Collins. And then when Kerry Collins was signed and came in, after that was all blown over, Reggie Wayne was one of the first guys to greet Kerry Collins and chat him up and get to know him and try and work and help him. So there's no dissension. I mean, Reggie's a pro. Reggie's in a contract year. Reggie just wants to be involved, as Keyshawn Johnson used to say, without screaming in or writing a book like Keyshawn. Reggie's got Curtis's back, too. He hopes Curtis gets a chance, but he's not going to say anything or do anything to be disrespectful. The funny thing is, and I wrote a blog yesterday about five reasons to stop worrying about Painter. You know, it started with, number one, he's not good. It ended with, number five, it doesn't matter who plays quarterback. This is a mess. So I'm trying to tell people, hey, don't worry about, don't sweat the small stuff. And Painter, just to be nice, I'm going to compliment him by saying he qualifies as small stuff, which usually doesn't fly on my radar.
You mentioned Reggie Wayne there. I want to tag on something that I saw at the end of the Browns game. And I know it's got to be tough when a franchise, you know, normally used to winning and they lose, and especially lose to a team like the Browns. But at the end of that game, the few shots they showed him on the sideline, he looked just disinterested totally. With what was going on. First, can you comment on that? And second, you know, they throughout his career, he's always lined up on that one side there. Have they given any inkling to maybe trying to move him around, to maybe find him some more space?
Yeah, you know, I've liked the Colts in the past because they've given different wrinkles every now and then. Reggie, for a while, they used him a lot in the slot. You know, and it really messed defenses up, you know, because if you put a Reggie in the slot, he's got more room to go either left or right. He's got more, because sometimes the sideline, ironically, can be confining to a receiver. You know, the DB might take the angle and try and shove him out wide toward the sideline, where I can't remember Reggie being in the slot much. I think they tried to play base offense, keep it simple, to help Terry Collins out because Terry doesn't know, you know, but a fraction of the plays that Peyton knew. And yeah, I saw the camera angle, and I said, Reggie's he's a competitor. He plays hard, tries hard. I think the world of him. He's always been straight up with me, whether it was on the record or off the record. A lot of guys don't do that. Reggie does. He'll tell you what he thinks, you know, and I know it's killing him because in a contract year without Peyton Manning, it's probably costing him money. It's probably costing him his next contract because he can't play and put up the numbers. He can't ensure that he's doing everything he can to help his team win because they can't get the ball to him consistently. You know, trust me when I say this. I mean, the guy is solid. He is absolutely solid. 32 years of age. I hope we see him after this year. I hope this isn't the last time he's here because I've enjoyed him immensely.
Hey, Phil, we've seen Jim Irsay on Twitter a little bit. What's he like? What's he like? And do you have any interaction with him? He seems like I don't want to use the term loose cannon about a guy I have no interaction with, but he seems to be a little bit of a different breed.
Well, hold on, guys. I've got to check my Twitter feed because I entered his contest on a song lyric. I know how long till the point of no return. That's Kansas, and I'm in for 2 tickets to the Steeler game and red carpet treatment to the suite. That's Jim Irsay right there. If you check his Twitter account, he's always giving away contests. Tribute type thing and giving away tickets or whatever. And he told Steeler fans, sorry, Steeler fans, you're not allowed to enter because he doesn't want Steeler fans in his suite, I guess, which I don't see why it'd be a big deal. I don't think Steeler fans would show up and be disrespectful or rude because they should be extremely confident the game's in the bag before kickoff. They should have a pleasant conversation about it. You know, come on, Jimmy, just accept your fate. But he is, he's out there. He's totally off the wall. I think the one picture up is with a white tux surrounded by guitars. My favorite back in the day that made the rounds was he had a picture of himself taken on a stool, sitting there leaning on a stool, naked, totally bare butt naked with the guitar covering up, you know, the important area, you know. There's not too many NFL owners that have a picture like that parading around, and I saw it and did a double take. So Jimmy is he's a lot of fun. He's out there. He's wild. At Jim Irsay is his log on, or handle on Twitter, capital J, capital I, all one word. And you wouldn't know from reading him it's an owner of a football team, except for the fact that he gives away all these tickets and stuff to the Colts. And, he's out there. He's absolutely off the wall. But I'll say this to you guys. I mean, I got married this summer, and the guy sent me and my wife a $200 bottle of French champagne as a gift. So he's got a big heart. He's a good guy. He's just a little different. And I'm wild and crazy, even though I don't sound like it. I'm wild and crazy, so maybe I somewhat identify with that spirit.
Good stuff.
Before we get you out of here, Phil, do you got you care to share your prediction with us, or do you want him to go to the blog?
Blog to read that? The crap out of the Steelers. Are you kidding me? Colts are going to run it up on the Steelers. You know, Willis Reed's going to come out of the locker room and play quarterback limping. And no, I'm half embarrassed to say it. I think my prediction for the game, because it's already online, is I'm trying to be kind and compliment the fighters in that locker room for the Colts. Okay? And in saying that, I still have Pittsburgh winning 24-13. And that tells you where I'm at on this team. I think it's a compliment that I'm suggesting the Colts would only lose by 11 points because either the Steelers will turn the ball over a little bit or they might get disinterested because they're ahead by a bunch, or they might realize after they kill 2 quarterbacks that, well, we like Pat McAfee. He's a Pennsylvania native. We don't want to hurt him. He's kind of funny, and he's great on Twitter, too. So 24-13 Steelers, but, you know, if Pittsburgh doesn't make some of the mistakes it has made, you know, in the first 2 games, and I realize most of them were in the first game, but, hell, they got stuffed on 4th and goal at the 1 in the first possession against Seattle, or then 31-0. I mean, there's some things they need to clean up yet, but if they come out and play sharp, razor sharp, and stick to Pittsburgh football, throwing when necessary, and pound on these guys, I don't see why the game won't be 2 touchdowns, maybe even more. So that's why I'm saying I was complimentary to the team I cover. I'm trying to tell fans that they might make a game of it for a while, which, shoot me, that's the limit of me being a homer.
Well, Phil, we appreciate the time. As I said at the beginning, Phil did double duty because we did this yesterday, and it disappeared into the ether. But great having you on. Make sure you're following Phil this week and the rest of the season, at PWilson24 on Twitter. And you can find his blog at the Indianapolis Star on Bounce It Off Phil B. Phil, thanks for being on the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.
Hey, guys, my pleasure. Grew up a huge Steeler fan, so that's Steel Curtain. So anytime, anywhere, and I wish you guys and the team the best of luck the rest of the year.
Great stuff. Thank you. Welcome back to part two of the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave. I want to thank Phil Wilson for his time. As we mentioned a couple times, Phil did that twice for us. A Pittsburgh guy at heart, rooting for the Steelers, been covering the Colts for a long time. Good stuff from him. Dave, let's get into it. This game, to me, looks a lot like what we saw last weekend. We've got a team that's got a more experienced quarterback, but a guy who's not particularly mobile. Tony Dungy, in his press conference on Tuesday, lauded Collins as being a veteran, a guy who can quickly pick up the system, a guy who gave the Steelers a little bit of trouble last year when he came off the bench for Tennessee. But it's just hard to get too worked up about the Colts without Peyton Manning.
Did you say Tony Dungy gave a press conference?
Did I say Tony Dungy?
Yeah.
Well, I meant Mike Tomlin, obviously.
Yeah. Tomlin, boy, when he goes through those things, we mentioned it before, you must have had a flashback there because, you know, let's face it, this is not the same Tony Dungy run Colts, you know, over the years, especially without Peyton Manning there. But, yeah, Mike Tomlin praised this guy. Let's face it, Collins is a guy that can still throw the ball deep. He's a smart quarterback. He's given the Steelers a little bit of fit over the years, but – in talking to Phil there, they're a pretty banged up team, David. And, you know, our interview was before the injury report came out on Thursday, and it's just littered with people on it. You know, Melvin Bullitt, their safety, you know, is not looking good for him to go. That might actually be a blessing with them. But linebacker Gary Brackett, you know, looks like he might not go. Ryan Deem, you know, a guard of theirs, right guard, I think, might not be able to go with that ankle of his. And even their two, smallest pass rushing defensive ends in Freeney and Robert Mathis, although I think both are going to play, they're a little banged up. And Collins even has missed a little practice time this week with a shoulder injury. So.
In fact, I think Collins missed a fair bit of Wednesday's practice. It sounds like he went and took more reps and had a more complete practice yesterday. I'm sure he will get the nod. But what's interesting is, and in fact, Phil wrote about this today, is they're going to go with two quarterbacks. And we know that Collins isn't the most mobile of guys. Painter hasn't been in there much. This is a situation where I don't want to predict doom for the opponent. Having done that against the Ravens, I'm a little gun shy. But this is a game where if the Steelers are putting their ears back and just rushing a quarterback, I would not want to be one of those two guys. And it certainly is going to be baptism by fire for Curtis Painter if he ends up getting some time on Sunday.
Yeah, and I'm with Phil on his evaluation of Painter. This guy just, I mean, every time. I think he had to play in a meaningless game a few years back when the Colts already had things wrapped up. I think if they would have won it, actually would have probably helped the Steelers in that game. I can't remember who they played. It seemed like they might have played the Jets in that game, and he just looked god-awful in that game. None of the preseason work he's gotten was, you know, very good at all. Let's face it, Collins, you know, unless he can't stand up anymore, he's going to play this game. I think the key, as you put it, you know, you got to get pressure on him, though, because this guy still has an arm. He can still wing the ball deep. So putting pressure on him, you know, is going to be key. He likes to hold the ball a little bit longer, than most. But he's not as effective as, say, a Ben Roethlisberger is, as he likes to hold the ball. So for starters, yeah, we got to get pressure on Collins.
Let's get into the Steeler injury report. Not a lot new, and in fact, the Steelers seem to be getting a little bit healthier. I think the two big things coming out of this week are that Pouncey, who was limited on Wednesday, had a complete practice yesterday. That's big news. That hamstring doesn't seem to be a huge issue. And Ben, with his knee, he's going through practice a little bit sore, but he's not wearing a brace. He's not listed on the injury report. There are other guys, but clearly having those two guys healthy is first and most important.
Yeah, I agree. I don't think that, you know, Pouncey wouldn't have gone full speed yesterday, and he's likely to go today if that hamstring was that bad. I think they just gave him the Wednesday light to, you know, just take it easy on it. Brett Kiesel, of course, is going to be down. Ziggy Hood's going to start in his place. You know, that I don't see that as a too terribly big of drop off there. You know, and Cotri and McFadden are back healthy and not on the injury report. But, you know, McFadden's not going to start now. And you pretty much called this one out last week, I believe, saying, hey, this guy might have lost his starting spot here due to injury. And, you know, that seems to be the case. It looks like Dick LeBeau.
Injury and bad play.
Yeah, well, I wouldn't say overly bad play. It just hasn't been, you know, above the line, I would tell you that. Played the system well, but, you know, he does play off a little bit too much, and he doesn't have that break part and hasn't for a while, going back to last year when he, you know, injury laden season last year as well. So Gay gets the start on the outside in his spot. According to LeBeau, you know, going to use the same rotation. So
That's what I found even more interesting. It's McFadden's not going to be the guy coming in the nickel and moving Gay inside. It's going to be Keenan Lewis.
Yeah. And you know, it almost makes you think at this point right now, why even have McFadden up, you know? So,
right. I'm with you.
You know, if you want to be careful with that hamstring, because let's face it, there's going to come a point in time where McFadden's probably going to have to play again this year. You never know how the injury bug's going to work. So why not just go ahead and keep him down and, you know, have those young kids, you know, backing them up and all. So good call by you. And I, you know, I didn't disagree either because, you know, it is what it is. And McFadden just cannot stay on the field for an extended period of time. The other person, Cotri, you know, that's an interesting situation there. Do you go with six wide this week or do you keep him? I mean, not six wide, six wide receivers up this week. Or do you just go ahead and leave him down again?
Yeah, I think that is an interesting question. I don't know the answer here. I know you and Ken Laird chatted about it on Twitter, as did I. It seems like the guys battling for hats now are Cotri. We can assume Chris Carter is going to be down, even though he's now healthy. Curtis Brown, McFadden. And, you know, I don't know. I guess Arnez Battle is guaranteed a hat. I don't know. I don't know if it's 100% sure that he gets, because if you dress Curtis Brown, maybe you don't need Arnez Battle to dress. Who knows? But I think this will be interesting to see. It's the first time most of the guys that they would have dressed on the home opener where everybody healthy are getting healthy. And so what we have is McFadden and Cotri coming back. And with Kiesel down, that's one guy who's going to be down. So the question is, who is the other guy? And I kind of agree with you. If McFadden's not really going to see the field, I'd rather see Curtis Brown get the helmet and dress on special teams. But I'm guessing that they do go with six wide receivers, and maybe Curtis Brown doesn't get the helmet.
I think Cotri will be up. I think Battle will be up as well. He's your special teams captain. He's a Al Evers.
Yeah, you're right. He's
an Al Evers guy.
He's the captain. He's going to dress.
Yeah, and Cotri, why not get him running? I mean, I could go either way on this. I could see this going either way. You know, you don't want to rush him back too quick, but on the flip side, you're going to need this guy at some point this year. I'm going to break this down as I do every week when I project my inactives on Saturday, and you know, I don't know which way I'm leaning, but I could see Cotri going either way on this.
Yep. Well, if he's healthy and he's practicing, I guess it's going to come down to those three guys for two helmets, right? Cotri, Curtis Brown, and McFadden. I guess it comes to them because McClendon's certainly dressing.
Oh, yeah. I mean, with Kiesel down, you got an open spot there. Just are you going to fill it with a defensive player or with a offensive player in Cotri? So, I mean, I could see Cotri dressing, to be honest with you. I really could.
Let's get into kind of the breakdown of the game here. I don't know that there's a ton for us to break down. We did a lot of this with Phil in the interview in the first part of the show. But basically, I guess, Dave, the question I would toss to you is, how much do you expect the Steelers to come out and try to pound the ball against these two ends, keep them honest, keep them from coming up the field. You know, the Colts have not been great against the run. The Steelers, I think, would like to establish the run a little bit more. Do you think they come out and are really thinking pound it first?
I think you're going to see balanced, and I think you have to be balanced. On the flip side, I think you want to take this crowd out of this game as soon as possible because of that. You know, that's a noisy place there, and it's been, you know, people have asked Tomlin. Everybody knows it's a noisy place, and I think you want to try to take them out of the game quick, so it would not surprise me to see them come out throwing the ball. You know, I think you'll see – you have to give the tackles help in this game. You know, let's face it, Gilbert and Jonathan Scott, I think I'm more fearful on Jonathan Scott's side than I am Gilbert's side. I thought Gilbert really showed, you know, some stuff last week. He's got the footwork. He's got the technique. He's got the jitters out of his system now. I think if you're going to help, you know, you're going to help both of them. But you know, every time you help both of them, that leaves a couple of guys out of the pass pattern. So I would not be surprised in the first series if the Steelers come out, I actually kind of no huddle and kind of you know, try to work the ball down the field a couple times. But yeah, you're right. You're definitely going to want to run at these defensive ends, especially if they're not healthy, to slow them down. And but I think you're going to see a real balanced attack by Bruce Arians on Sunday night, and you know, especially hopefully they can jump on them quick, maybe 14-0 or something like that, and then be able to work the run a little bit more, because let's face it, it's something that they do need to work on as well before we get into these cold months.
Yep, I'm with you. You know, we think about this team and we think about the offensive weapons with all the receivers, and you know, the four receivers have looked very good. Heath Miller, you know, when he's had a chance, Rashard really hasn't gotten the ball out of the backfield much, but they just have so many weapons that it's hard not to want them to air it out. And I'm with you on taking the crowd out of the game. And as we heard, the Indy corners, they've got one good corner, one weak corner. And in fact, over at that, on that weak corner side, it looks like there might even be a change of personnel in the starting lineup for them on Sunday night. So we'll see how that unfolds.
Yeah, you've got, you know, you might have David Caldwell replace some bullet at safety, and you might have Terrence Johnson, you know, in at corner replacing Jacob Lacy. So, boy, you know, you have to attack a young secondary like that, don't you?
Yeah, and of course, their middle linebacker looks like he's going to be out, Bracken, right?
Right, Brackett's going to be out as well, too. So, you know, he should have his pick of underneath and over top here for the most part. Of course, it's going to depend on the time that he gets. Teams have focused, it seems like, first two games have taken away Wallace up over the top. You know, everybody wants to defend against a big play now. We've seen Wallace is not a one-trick pony anymore. He can definitely, you know, work the underneath stuff. We haven't seen too terribly much of Heath Miller yet. And if he's not needed as much, you know, helping the tackles, yeah, this game, you could see him used a little bit more. They try to clear out the open middle of the field there and get Heath Miller the ball over the middle.
I think the interesting thing for me to watch, particularly in the first half of the game, is how much what kind of sets the Steelers are running. I could see them running a lot of two tight end sets with Johnson and Miller to help the tackles, like you said. And that would leave them with two wideouts. I'll be interested to see how often they line up in the four wide receiver set. So to me, the thing that I'm going to be paying attention to on the offensive side of the ball is that pretty much what kind of personnel groupings do they want to come out with against a team that they probably think they can dominate, but who have two dominant players on the ends, which at least make it interesting.
Yeah, a lot of 11 and 12 personnel like they did last week. I thought we would. And, of course, winning, being up in a game leads to more 12 personnel with the two tight ends because you're probably going to run more. And I think you're going to see, you know, them do that again this year. Not a lot of zero sets, five wide receivers, not a lot of that. And I'm with you. I'll be surprised to see if they actually try to spread them out with a four wide receiver package with either one tight end or one running back in the game. So, but I think you got to take these guys out early because they're still a dangerous team. They're a much more dangerous team than the Seahawks team that we faced last week.
Yeah, that's important. And where they are dangerous, let's get to the other side of the ball. The Steelers defensively and the Colts offensively still have talented guys. Phil seemed to suggest that Dallas Clark maybe has lost half a step, but still a veteran tight end and knows what he's doing. Joseph Addai, Reggie Wayne, Garcon, Colley. You know, these are names that we're familiar with. These guys have played winning football for a number of years now. They've been in big games. They know what that's all about. And, you know, I don't know if they've thrown in the towel in their season, but certainly if you're a team 0-2 and you got a Sunday night nationally televised game, you go 0-3, your season's pretty much toast. So they've got something to play for. I don't know what it sounds like. These guys are still in it. They're still focused on and they're still professionals. So I expect them to come out and give it a go. And Reggie Wayne is certainly a dangerous guy. It'll be interesting to see if the Steelers have Ike follow him around or if they match up differently. I imagine they will have Ike follow him. Well, he's not going to follow him around because he's always on the same side of the field.
Yeah, I think you're going to see Ike on Reggie Wayne all day. I've got Reggie Wayne in one of my fantasy leagues. I'm thinking about benching him this game without a doubt. You know, this is a team that's rushed the ball pretty good, 4.12 yards per carry or per running play here. Passing, not so much, 5.04 passing yards per play. What's killed the Colts, man, is third down percentage, 21.74 on third downs. You know, they were in the game, and the red zone offense has struggled too, 33.33% inside the red zone. They had quite a few trips down in the red zone, I believe, against the Browns last week, but had to settle for threes. The Steelers are going to follow that same, you know, defensive scheme for the most part. Although, you know, the Browns used the 4-3, but you know, a lot of things that they tried to take away from the Colts, I see the Steelers trying to do the same here. And I got to emphasize, you know, you hit on it first. 0-3 is a dangerous start, almost the nail in the coffin for a team. This is a team that has to win this game, and it still makes them dangerous. This is a better team than the Seahawks, regardless, even without Peyton Manning. And you just got to be careful here. I think you're going to see Troy play a little bit back this time, guarding against the big play because of the arm strength of Kerry Collins. I think they're going to try to stop the run with just the seven guys up front there. I think Woodley could have a field day on his side there because, as Phil told us, you know, they could be very young over there, especially if Ryan Deem does not play. And, you know, I'm expecting good things on that side. So if they shut down the run with seven and the corners play like they have the ability to play, you really have a hard time seeing the Colts doing much on offense.
Yeah, I'm with you. It'll be, you know, the Steelers decided, I think, they took a tact against Tavares Jackson, a young guy, not a lot of experience, some good scrambling ability, a mobile guy. So not exactly like Kerry Collins in that sense, but they didn't blitz him much, particularly the first half of that game. They sat guys back in coverage, made him take short stuff, wasn't able to go deep, and obviously the Seahawks couldn't move the ball because his pass completion percentage, even though it was relatively high, he was taking all the underneath stuff. Kerry Collins comes into the game, I think, 30th in the NFL in completion percentage at 50.7%. You know, I think the Steelers probably take a different approach with him. I think they'll probably come lots of blitzes, try to hit him early, try to hit him often, get him off his rhythm so he doesn't get to sit there in the pocket. So I think we'll see a different defensive approach from the Steelers. But as you said, maybe that affords them with that approach to leave Troy back out of the box. The Colts are definitely going to try to run the ball. So early on, you know, we'll see. They've been, as we talked about in the first segment, they've been effective maybe for the first time in years at running it. And, you know, it's somewhat coincidental is they don't have their field general back there running the show. And I don't know if it's cause and effect or it's just coincidence. I'm sure it's more the latter. But we'll see what they can do with a die. And, I don't know where Troy will be early in that game because if they really think the Colts are going to sit there and try to pound the ball, maybe Troy comes up early and gets to freelance a little bit.
Well, you know, I keep these talk stats. I'm a big believer in explosive plays and turnovers. I just don't think you can give up the big play to someone like Kerry Collins, who definitely has the arm strength and is not afraid to hold the ball in the pocket. So pressure early, as you said, I think it'll be a little bit of different approach than it was last week. I think LeBeau, especially if Ryan Deem does not start, I mean, that's going to be a very, very young offensive line that has not seen the likes of some of the stuff that LeBeau's probably going to throw at him. So, yeah, I'm with you, David. You know, get after Kerry Collins early, protect from the big play, and try to force something that we haven't seen from the Steelers' defense thus far in two games, and that's a turnover. We need to start getting turnovers on defense, and hopefully this is the week. Force Kerry Collins into some bad throws.
Yep. Well, Dave, I'm not sure there's much more to get to since we did 20 with Phil and we've wrapped it up here. Do you want to get to our picks for the week? We've been ripping it the first 2 weeks.
Like you said, I don't think there's much to wrap up on this. It's pretty straightforward. The Colts are a team that we should dominate. And, we laid it out in about 40 minutes here with Phil and us. So let's get on to our picks.
All right. Let's roll through this. I'll tell you, I got a couple that might be off the board a little bit for you. The divisional game, first game on the card, is the Niners are at Cincinnati. I think Cincinnati's played a little bit better than people have expected to start the season. The Niners lose a tough one. They probably should have won at home against Dallas last weekend. Cincinnati's a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to take the Niners in the points.
Wow, this is a tough game to call because you still don't know Dalton is yet to throw an interception yet. They've had some pretty big explosive plays thus far. So, and Cedric Benson, he's still not going to go. He's not suspended yet. He's going to appeal that. Jerome Simpson, I don't think he's going to play after having all that weed UPS to the house. Give me the Bengals minus the points.
All right. An interesting game in the conference, in the other division. The Pats are laying 8.5 to the Bills. I think you look at that Pats-Chargers game and say maybe the Chargers missed an opportunity with turnovers and some dumb plays. The Patriots offensively appear unstoppable. The game's in Buffalo, and if you watched the Belichick show last night, the Patriots have generally had a tough time at Buffalo. I'm probably not going to touch this one, but if it's under 10, I still got to like New England. I do think they'll give up points, but their offense is so good right now. I just kind of feel like they can put up 35 anytime.
Yeah, they dare you to run with them. And the Patriots are another team that have given up big plays over the first 2 weeks of the season. The Bills, I think, will be able to get some big plays on them, but I just don't think they're going to be able to keep up with New England. Now, I called the Bills a surprise team early before the season started. They've already got two good wins underneath their belt. They won't win this game, but everybody, I think that plus 9 is very, very attractive, but I'm going the other way on this. I'm laying the 9 points for the Patriots.
All right. Maybe the marquee game of the week that flies under the radar a little is the Texans and the Saints, an interconference game. The Texans, this will be fun to watch because the Steelers have the Texans next week, and I think that will be the first game since the opener that we really get a real test. I'm not touching this, but I don't think the Texans are there yet on the road to play against a really good team like the Saints. I expect a competitive game, but something like 27-20 for New Orleans, so I would lay the points.
What do you see in line on that on your end?
I'm seeing four.
Four Saints by four?
Yeah.
Because I'm showing this off for some reason. Wow, Saints at home, that's a ruckus crowd. This is going to be a shootout. Let's face it. I see this coming down to a field goal game. So give me the Texans plus the points. Saints win.
All right. The next game is this was off the board for a while. I'm seeing a line now, the Eagles and the Giants. It's all based on Michael Vick and whether he's going to go. And it looks like he got cleared last night. Full football activity. He's expected to start. The Eagles look like a 7.5-point favorite. I like the Eagles. I think they're a pretty explosive team as well. I like them at home in a division game. I'm not impressed with the Giants. I've never been a big Eli Manning fan. Number's not exactly what I'd like, being a touch over 7, but I'd lay it.
I'd lay it too. Giants are going to have to be able to run the ball in this game. I think they lost another receiver maybe in Hicks in this past week.
Yep.
All they have is just Hicks and their running backs for the most part. I just don't think that's enough, especially if Michael Vick plays. And, hey, that Kafka kid, if he has to play, hasn't looked too shabby in relief of Vick. So, I think he could still get the job done if he indeed has to enter the game. Eagles minus the points.
The next one doesn't do a lot for me, but it is a division foe. Cleveland's hosting the Dolphins, and much like Cincinnati, they're a favorite by 2.5. I think people have expected better from the Dolphins here the first 2 weeks. They played New England tough for a while in the opener. I got no interest in this game. I don't know what to think. 2.5 is not a number I'm comfortable with either way, so I'm going to take a pass.
I've got 3 on my end, and I'm gonna take that. I think the Dolphins with that kid Thomas at running back. I think they match up well against the Browns. So even on the road, I just can't see the Dolphins starting off an 0-3 team. So give me the Dolphins plus 3.
All right. Tennessee, 6.5 over Denver in Tennessee. I think the jury is out big time on the Titans. Chris Johnson didn't have much of a game last week, but they managed to just smoke the Ravens. Denver, Kyle Orton at the helm. I don't think they're a terrible team. I'm not sure. You know, Tennessee, Kenny Britt, I guess, is off to a fantastic start. Hasselbeck's been pretty good. I think they had a major upgrade at quarterback. I guess I feel like I don't know what kind of team the Titans really are, and the Steelers are going to get them in a couple weeks. So I'm interested to see if they come in and blow the Broncos out. I'm surprised the line was 6.5. I thought it might be 4, 3.5, or 4. Another game I'd probably take a pass on. I'm not sure what to expect.
The key that you hit on in this was Kenny Britt, I think. I think he's a difference maker. Denver has not been able to stop. I think they've given up 5 pass plays of 20 yards or more, which is not, you know, terribly high. But, I mean, I just don't see them making the big plays on offense either. So, you know, I'd take Tennessee and I'd lay the points here.
All right, Detroit is at Minnesota. Detroit's the darling in the NFL in the first 2 weeks. Matthew Stafford to Megatron, Calvin Johnson, as explosive as any quarterback-wide receiver combination. They're a 3.5-point favorite on the road at Minnesota, a division foe who really rolled over last week in the second half to Tampa, up 17-0, lose that game 21-17. I didn't see a lot of it. There's even talk now about when is Christian Ponder going to get in there at quarterback in place of Donovan McNabb. Too early for that. They're a veteran team. They still have Adrian Peterson, Percy Harvin. They've got weapons. I really like Detroit, but again, a game I might take a pass on because the Vikings, this is a big game for them. 3.5 seems like a lot for them to get at home.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, the Lions have played real well, and I think Vegas has kind of taken advantage of this a little bit and trying to you know, get some people to jump on them here. I believe in the Lions. I believe they're going to have a good season this year. I'm not convinced that they win this game, though. Vikings at home, they still got the weapons. They still got Donovan McNabb at quarterback. I believe Jared Allen's a go in this game as well at defensive end. Give me the Vikings at home plus the 4.
Yeah. Well, you're always getting different lines than I'm getting here. Carolina's at home against the Jaguars, laying 3.5. It's Blake Gabbert's, what's his name? Is that his first name? Blake? Is it Blake?
Blaine.
Blaine Gabbert, right. Blaine Gabbert getting his first start for the Jaguars. I hate betting on rookie QBs. We got two of them in this game. Cam Newton's done a lot of good things. You know, the yardage is unbelievable. The interceptions are higher than you'd like. Both of these teams stink. Carolina's given 3.5. I think Carolina wins the game because I don't see Gabbert moving this team. I don't think the Jaguars are any good at all. So I'll lay 3.5 with Carolina.
Yeah, I'm going to lay it too, even though I won't set the DVR at all for this game.
Exactly.
This is going to – you could have 8 or 9, 10 turnovers in this game, I'm willing to bet. But, Newton seems to be ahead of Gabbert right now. So, lay the points with the Panthers.
Chargers, Chiefs, Chargers land 14.5. It's a huge line. The Chiefs, we know the injuries they've had. Jamal Charles is the latest out. They actually do have some reasonable backups at running back. It's one place where they had some depth with Dexter Thomas Jones, a few other guys. Kansas City's probably not as bad as they have been the first 2 weeks, but I expect San Diego to play a good game, a really good game here at home, and blow them out of the water. So I think another game where you might see the Chiefs give up 38, 41 points. So I'd lay it.
Yeah, McCluster running back along with Thomas Jones, Jackie Battle, that's just not going to be enough. Their only prime receiving threat really is Dwayne Bowe, and he's really – I think teams know that they have to get the ball to him now, especially when they're behind. Bo might have a lot of catches in this game, but let's face it, the Chargers are coming off of a tough loss against the Patriots where they shot themselves in the foot several times. Chargers will be ready to play at home. 14.5, I'd lay it.
Jets at Oakland. I like Oakland. I love their ground attack. I'll take the 3.5 at home.
Ooh, wow. This game confuses me. You just don't know what you're going to get out of Sanchez from week to week. Oakland has been able to run the ball, but I'm not sure that they're going to be able to spread the field with those fast wide receivers against the Jets corners. It's tough to lay 3.5. What are you seeing on this?
3.5.
Yep. It's tough to lay 3.5 on the road, but if anybody can knock it off, I think it's the Jets. I'm gonna take the Jets minus the points.
All right, two teams that I'm not sure what we have in the Ravens at St. Louis. The Ravens, a 4-point favorite. You know, we saw them play a great game against Pittsburgh and a god-awful game against Tennessee. The Rams on Monday night really could have done better. Their red zone offense was not good. Their pass defense wasn't particularly good. That's disappointing. I'd like to think they'll do a better job at home. Another game that I think I'll take a pass on at 4, it doesn't really excite me. I'd like to see the Rams play better. You know, I don't know what to expect. I'll take a pass.
Yeah, I'm going to pass on this game as well. I won't be playing this one. But the Rams, you know, they shot themselves in the foot in the red zone. They couldn't do it against the Giants. They gave up stupid fumble recovery for, you know, on a backwards pass there that should never happen. God, gun to my head, man. Ravens coming off that tough, stinging loss. Give me the Ravens. Lay the points.
Vegas has an idea on this next one, Atlanta at Tampa, with Tampa a 1.5-point favorite. A really nice comeback win for them on the road last week in Minnesota. A very nice comeback win at home for Atlanta against the Eagles once Michael Vick got knocked out, 35-31. Their offense moved the ball finally. I thought this line would be 3 for Atlanta. It's 1.5. I think Tampa's a decent team. They're still young, but this is Atlanta's. This is a real, I think, a significant game for the Falcons. I'm going to take the points on the road.
Boy, you, I would have thought the Falcons would have been favored in this game as well. I would have to take Falcons plus points.
Yep. Arizona at Seattle in a game that nobody except the people in Arizona and Seattle care about. We saw how bad Seattle was. They're at home. They're getting 3.5. Home teams 0-2. Dangerous getting points. The Cardinals aren't that good, but I do think they're better than Seattle. Are they 3.5 points better? I don't know. This game's probably close, but Seattle's offense just looks so bad to me. I can't see them putting up more than kind of – I can't see them putting up 17 points. And so I do think Arizona has that capability to score some points. So, you know, I don't have any interest in the game, but I'll lay the 3.5.
I'm with you. I'm going to lay the 3.5 in this one. I just don't think the Seahawks have they just look dismal. If teams know that they can just make them beat them in, with the short stuff, that's exactly what they're going to do. Even though Jackson might have good numbers completion-wise, I don't think they're going to be able to move the field ball down the field. Cardinals lay the points.
The last three games are really the marquee games in the NFL. Probably looked at these games and licked their chops. Obviously, with Peyton Manning out, the Steeler game has taken on a whole different dimension. But the last 4 o'clock game is the Packers and the Bears. The Bears with the great start at home, the win against the Falcons. You know, this is a divisional game. 3.5 for Green Bay. I think anybody who's watched Green Bay knows how explosive their offense is. And so that's really the matchup, Green Bay's offense against Chicago's defense. It's hard for me. You know, Chicago wasn't as good last weekend. They can't protect Cutler. I'm on the Packer bandwagon until I'm proved that I'm wrong. So 3.5 on the road, again, isn't the perfect number to be laying, but I'm laying it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I'm laying it, too. As long as Green Bay doesn't turn the ball over, there's no reason to think that, in my opinion, that they should lose this game. I think 3.5 is a dangerous number there with you. This could easily be a 3-point game when it's all said and done, depending on the ebb and flow of it. You know, Bears at home, Packers minus the points.
The Monday night game is Dallas at Washington. Washington, I think, has surprised people being competitive. Excuse me, that game's in Dallas. It's Washington at Dallas. Washington has surprised people with their good play from the start. Rex Grossman's been better than he has been in most of the past of his career. Tim Hightower has the running attack, adding some value. I don't know that they're a good team. Tony Romo's injury kept this game off the board for a while. It looks like he's going to play. How effective he'll be, hard to know. I mean, the guy had a punctured lung along with the cracked ribs, so he's not going to be able to take a lot of shots back there. Having said that, I think Dallas is a decent team. I don't know how good they are with Romo on the bench. Is Kitna still the number two guy there?
Yep.
He, you know, he can throw the ball. He's a better than average NFL backup, that's for sure. That line's 6.5. If it stays under 7, I guess I'd be inclined to take the Cowboys.
Wow, Dallas might be looks like going to be without Miles Austin. Looks like Dez Bryant's status is still up in the air. You have Romo banged up. I just don't see how the Cowboys can win this game. Now, that being said, 7.5. What did you say, 6.5?
6.5.
Yeah, I'm showing off the board still on my side. Yeah, I'm with you. If it stays under 7, it'd be hard to ignore from the Redskins' side of the ball. I think they're a touchdown better than the Cowboys here. So, Redskins, boy, a lot of laying the points on the road this week, huh?
Well, it's the Cowboys are the favorite by 6.5.
Oh, so Cowboys are favored by 6.5 in this game.
Yeah.
Damn. Hell yeah, I'd take the Redskins in this. It would have to be something freaky, like you said. Maybe Kitna comes in and does a number on them. But, man, that's just too many injuries on the Cowboys' side of the ball. This game's off on my board. Redskins plus the points, man.
The last game, the Steelers land 10.5 in Indy. Dave, I jumped you last week. I'm going to jump you again this week. We were a point off. I let you go first, actually. We were a point off in our final scores. I'll tell you, I'm going to pick very similar number this week. I'm going to go Steelers 31, Colts 10.
30, what'd you say, 31-10? I'm writing this down. Okay, there's no way the Colts can win this game. I'm just not convinced. On the flip side, they're going to score a few points. 13 for the Colts, 34 for the Steelers.
All right. We both got 21-point victories, ergo the Steelers cover. Good stuff. Anything you want to wrap up before we close?
Have you been force-fed the Bill Belichick stuff last night?
I did see it last night. I missed the first episode. I thought the hype was better than the show. I thought the show was okay. I enjoyed what, I didn't feel like it was an hour wasted, but I'm not sure I got any great keen insights into what was going on with the Patriots or the NFL.
Yeah, it was okay. I mean, I thought the first one was better than the second one. I like how they show the losing at the end there with the one scene with Brady and Belichick standing on the sideline trying to say how he can't get this team going together, and Brady just agreeing with him the whole time. But yeah, it was okay. It'll probably win an award for something. But unfortunately, now we'll have to watch it all this week until the next Thursday episode of I think it's Reggie White and. The other Eagles player.
Brown.
Jerome Brown. Yeah, so that'll be interesting.
All right, well, that's going to wrap up episode 20 of season 2 as the Steelers take on the Indianapolis Colts Sunday night at 8:20. Remember, for all your latest and greatest Steelers info, go to SteelersDepot.com. You can follow Dave on Twitter, at SteelersDepot. He is right on the 10,000 number, so somebody there is going to be lucky number 10,000. You can follow me at Hammer Speaks, and we will be back with you Monday, hopefully recapping a good Steelers victory. Thanks for listening to the Terrible Podcast with Dave and Dave.